You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The Community Broadcasting Foundation resources community-owned and operated media stations just like this one that connect people and tell vital, local stories so that we all enjoy a more vibrant, inclusive Australian culture and healthy democracy. Find out more about our work at cbf.com.au.
From Jinden to Tarago, Bungendore to Nelligan, Braidwood FM, your local radio station.
Joe Curtin, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Joe. Well, thanks for joining us today here on Braidwood FM. How are you doing?
I'm fabulous today. Thank you for having me on, Bill and Rod and Vera too. I'm very pleased to be joining you and being in to your beautiful community.
Oh, well, that's great. You're the chief executive of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. I wondered if you could tell us what the foundation does and how it works in simple terms.
So the Community Broadcasting Foundation was established nearly 40 years ago, really long time that we've been around, what was then the Public Broadcasting Association of Australia, which is now the CBAA, Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. They and the Commonwealth Government needed to figure out a way to be able to support the community broadcasting sector with funding, and essentially dreamed up this idea that this independent organisation could do that work and could support all the communities that have community radio stations and also community TV these days too, by running independent grant programs. So that's what we do. We manage grant programs that support community radio stations and community TV all around Australia. And we distribute your money, public funds. So last year it was about $20 million. And there's about 450 community radio stations around Australia. In any given year, we probably support nearly 300, really. So a lot of organisations who reach out to us and we support do all sorts of wonderful things that I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about today.
And the Community Broadcasting Foundation has support of multiple parties. I guess it goes beyond bipartisan support.
A lot of independence. Multipartisan, I think we would say.
Yeah, multipartisan.
That's right. I think it's partly because we solve a bit of a problem for whichever government's in power at the time by having a process in place that's really robust, that's driven by the sector that we are serving. So it really means that throughout all of our processes and everything, we have community broadcasters involved in the decision-making and are making those decisions around where those funds should flow and what the priorities are and what kind of issues funding might be able to help address across the sector. So in that way, the government, whichever government is in power at the time, has kind of outsourced that issue to us in some ways,
so there can't be any pork barreling that day. Yeah.
Well, that's true, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I think we have that opportunity though to actually to walk the talk of being community, to have community at our heart of what we're doing and how we work. And we have over, I think at last count it was something like 140 volunteers who help make the process work and are the real cogs in the machine of our grant process, because a lot of that is requiring that kind of expertise and knowledge of people knowing what community broadcasting is all about and what it's doing and why it's there, and also to have that sense of where the priorities lie, what the needs are in the community, and it really helps to have that insight in the actual decision-making process around where those funds flow.
Wouldn't it be great if every government sort of financing of things in the community was at arm's length like that? You know, car parks spring to mind, for example.
Well, look, I mean, no comment on that, but I think the bureaucrats that we deal with in the Department of Communications have certainly said that our process is kind of the exemplar, you know, like we have this amazing process in place and machinery around what we do that involves people and makes sure that the decisions that we make are really sound and fair. So certainly, I think that we have been used as an example, if you like, around how this can work and work really well.
It's interesting. I've been involved in making a couple of submissions over the years, and what I really like is the way in which the applications pick up the idea of gender equity, pick up the idea of catering to Indigenous people and their needs within a community. It can be hard to do sometimes, but it makes you really think things through.
Yeah, and I guess that's, in some ways, it's a granting process is on some levels can be complicated, but on others we try and keep it really simple. But it can be a bit of a prod in some ways to help a station or an organisation reflect on its practices. And all of that is kind of in tune with and aligned to the community radio codes of practice, which are the kind of foundational set of, you know, guiding principles about why community broadcasting is here and what it's trying to do, why it's important in our community. And in a lot of ways, what we're doing at the Community Broadcasting Foundation is reflecting that and aiming to strengthen that. So helping community radio stations think about their audiences and how that might mean thinking about that the connection and belonging that they're creating for people within the community through everyday broadcasting, right?
Yeah.
Day in, day out. That's what you guys are doing. But then also thinking about who's not involved in our station and why? What does that mean? That maybe there's an aspect of our community that haven't really tapped into that opportunity. And thinking outside of the square, if you like, around, okay, maybe there's something that we could be doing to helping engage different parts of our community. And some of the grant funds that we have can assist with those sorts of things, which could be, engaging multicultural broadcasters so that, there's different ethnic language programs that might be happening that we support, or connecting in with First Nations broadcasters and supporting them to get on air, all sorts of different aspects. Lots of stations kind of come up with ideas around that idea of getting people participating and encouraging them to really make use of this voice that they have in the community through their station. And that can be anything from getting young school kids involved through school programming, right through to programs that are really addressing loneliness in the community and older, more isolated folks, all sorts of, like, and everything in between, and beyond. So that's a really important role that community broadcasting is playing in the community, and it's keeping people connected and making sure that they're hearing local people talk about things that are important locally, and sharing that information and news that's relevant to them so that they're actually able to really participate in community life. You know, that's a really big part of it.
In Joe, in terms of specific things you fund, you talked about funding stations to be, empowering them to do different things. But specifically, I mean, it runs the gamut, doesn't it? From equipment to training to... all sorts of things in between.
That's true, and sometimes, Bill, it's like the tiniest thing can make a huge difference. Like we did just provide a grant to a station up in Tweed Heads that was flooded, and we were able to help them with a really small grant for some mobile broadcasting equipment just so that they could keep the broadcast going while they couldn't get into where they needed to be, you know. And that was a drop in the ocean in terms of the support that we provide across the whole sector in a year. But, gee, that's going to make a big difference to that community.
Mm.
And all the way through to some of the really more complicated long-term things that we're funding that in many ways it's kind of like pooling the resources of the sector so that we can have access to technology or resources that the whole sector can benefit from, which ultimately means that audiences might be able to access their station in more diverse ways, like through, you know, we've supported the development of an app that's coming out soon that will help people be able to find their local community station and listen through their phone and all that sort of stuff. So that's, you know, that kind of thing, on one level at a station, it might be beyond them in terms of cost or expertise, but what we're able to do is to be able to support that kind of project where it's actually touching hundreds of stations. Hundreds and hundreds of stations will be able to use that platform to help reach their community so that they can access things on demand, you know.
I was wondering if we, thanks for that. I was wondering if we could change focus a little. Could we talk a little bit about your background before you got to the position you're in?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know what? It's funny thinking about just when you can reflect back and see the different threads that come together for you, in your life, you know, which makes me sound maybe like I'm older, but I'm not too old still. But I can distinctly remember when I was a kid, my mum and I moved to Wynyard in Tassie, in the northwest of Tasmania. And it was in a period of time of a fair bit of disruption in my life. My parents had just divorced, and it was, you know, this is pre-primary school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Little kid. And I can remember, I'm really taking you back. I hope that's okay.
That's all right. That's fine.
Yeah. That my first connections with community radio was that my mum, for my birthday, requested a song on the local community radio station for me. Uh-huh. And back in those days, there was no downloading of something on the internet. That didn't exist. So what she had to do to get the song that she wanted played on the local community radio station was she had it on a record, and she hopped on her bike, rode down to the station with the record so she could give it to the station so they could play it for me, and then I'd hear my name on the radio and that kind of thing. And I think back to that, and I actually think that is, I mean, it's hilarious on a lot of levels, but also really for me captures how that station was fulfilling a need in our lives at that time, where we were completely in a different community. We hadn't, you know, hadn't made friends locally. And here was my mum being able to connect in, you know, and actually provide something joyful through the community radio station. And I think even though I only thought of that a couple of years ago, it sort of just pops back into my mind. But all through my life, community radio has had an influence. And that's pretty special that I get to now work within the space that's helping facilitate that. So through my work at the Community Broadcasting Foundation. But ultimately, my background is more, when I finished school, I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I ended up studying media because I loved reading and English, and I wanted to potentially be a journo. But in studying media, discovered community radio through student radio at the university I was going to, and did some volunteering stints at some local stations, and that was really how I got sucked in. I think it was partly because when you're studying media, they say to you, you won't get a job unless you get some practical experience, and you need to do that through community broadcasting. So that's, you know, I was like, oh, well, I guess I want to get employed eventually. So that's how I started getting involved. And the rest is history, really. I got involved in the student station at the time. So in Melbourne, it was a very heady time around a licensing time, and the station I was involved in got a full-time license, And before I knew it, I was the station manager of that station. We needed to get the station ready to get on air full time, which was very exciting and pretty intense as a first ever job out of uni, but really fun. And after that, I when I realised that I didn't want to be the kind of too old person working at the youth station, I moved on. And
I've been there, done that too, actually. Yeah,
I was thinking this sounds like you, Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
And I moved on to a station in Melbourne that is specifically catering to multicultural groups, and worked there for a couple of years, and then ended up, had my sights really set on working at the Community Broadcasting Foundation, because I could really sense the opportunity that that has for making a difference, and I really felt that this was the space I was carving out. It was that in my nerdy way, in the work that I do, you know, kind of processing and administering and managing and supporting, essentially living vicariously through all of the good work that happens out in the sector, at the coalface, you know, if you like, in community radio stations. I knew that I could really support an appropriate process for the grant program, and have been working at the CBF for a few years, really, quite a few years. So worked my way up, really, to the role that I'm in now.
Well, the first CEO, Ian Stanistreet, he was in there for many years, wasn't he? So you're the second, right? The second CEO?
Oh, I think technically, yes, there was someone before Ian.
Oh, okay.
But, but yes, you're right, Ian was at the helm for 20 years. Really amazing contribution to this organisation that I work in now. And I quite often will say to my team, I went to the school of Ian Stanistreet. Because, you know, if there was ever a person, I mean, just the level of respect that the sector has for him, and that we have for him, because of his just scrupulous attention to detail and absolutely, you know, trust that everybody has in him to do such an excellent job. Eventually, you know, he retired, so that's what he's doing now. He's enjoying his retirement with his family, and really pleased that he gets to be able to do that, because he just put in such a huge amount of work over such a long period of time. Yeah, to really support the development of the community broadcasting sector. It's really amazing.
He certainly did, and I always look forward to chatting with him at conferences and things. We go back many, many years. Well, and so you got the gig, and COVID hit. Has that changed the way the CBF works?
Yeah, look, what a shocker, hey? It's like the timing was wild. I had just been on maternity leave. I've got a two-year-old now. And I was coming back after 6 months after having a baby and applied for this role while COVID was happening. And I remember I had to go into the city for the interview, and it was dead. There was no one in there. And it was really strange. And then coming back into the role, as everything was really, you know, pretty chaotic in the world. You know, there was scrambling happening left, right and centre around how to respond, how to support stations that were continuing to broadcast, and doing all sorts of, on the ground. It was a lot of stations were telling me stories about how they had to keep their communities safe, and still are, you know, working within all of those protocols that had to be dreamt up and figured out on the fly. So it was a really full-on time to kind of come back into this big role. But and everybody was working from home. So, and we sort of still are. Like in Melbourne, we've only really just gotten to the point where we're back to the point where we can get into the office without masks on. So we're working on that, and working flexibly with the team around how they're going to do that. But it was a really amazing opportunity for me, I think, in I mean, a lot of people reflect now on the pandemic creating a bit of a reboot moment on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think what that meant was we had the opportunity to develop our strategic plan during during essentially lockdowns, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We did manage to get our board together in May last year, which was like this incredible, I don't even remember how we managed to do it, because we're bringing people in from across the country. It just had this window of time where we were allowed to and people could do it and they felt comfortable, and all, we all went back to square one again with lockdowns, right? But what we were able to do was actually get together and imagine what is community broadcasting doing in the future? How is it contributing to everyday life for people in Australia? And what role does the CBF play in that? And how can we actually make sure that the sector itself is viable in the long term? How are we going to make sure that community radio stations can be viable long term? There's a lot of stations struggling through the pandemic and through the many extreme weather events that are happening regularly as a result of climate change. So I think, how do we make sure that this incredibly vital service across communities across Australia is there long term, and what does that future look like? So it was a brilliant opportunity coming into this role and being at that stage where we could ask these questions and come up with some strategies around how we can really support stations to be at the heart of their community.
So you turned a challenge into a real opportunity there. And I guess, you know, community broadcasting's changed over the years. I mean, I remember when there were 12 or 13 stations, but the fact is that with the withdrawal of the ABC and commercial broadcasting, the regional newsrooms all closing down, it's even more vital that particularly in rural areas, that
absolutely,
often the only service that has anything that's local at all.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we're delighted you could join us today, Joe.
Pleasure.
Thanks for chatting with us and telling us about the CBF and your background. Okay. Interesting start there with the request from your mum. That's a great story.
Pretty daggy, right?
I'd love to have you back, actually, Joe, because there's a few areas that I think we could go into and explore. I'm particularly interested in how the CBF responded to not just the floods but the fires before that. So we might give you another call if that's all right.
Sure, right. I'd love that.
Good on you.
Once I get going, I could talk all day.
Okay.
You've got a 2-year-old. I know that's not true.
True. Sure. Fair enough.
Thanks, Joe. Take care.
You
stay
take
safe.
Care. Bye.
Good on you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Braidwood FM.